to order and open a work session on Senate Bill 717. My intention in this bill to adopt an amendment and then move the bill to rules. And the amendment I think we need is, I think we need the A5s.
Senator Warner, Senator Schumer.
Yeah. Okay. So, can I have a motion on the A5?
Do you want me to prepare and move the A5s into Senate Bill 717?
Is there any discussion on that? That's to clarify some language.
One moment. The dash fives?
The dash fives.
Can you describe the amendment, please?
Sure.
Why don't you describe the bill and the amendment?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you will recall that Senate Bill 717A requires the Board of Medical Examiners to appoint a scope of practice review committee for the regulation of the health professions when it is requested to review a proposed change to the scope of practice of a healthcare profession. We've had a couple of discussions on this. The A5 amendments come from Senator Montes Anderson, and what they are doing are they currently, as the bill is written, it directs the Board of Medical Examiners to choose the opponents, the two opponent membership of the five-member committee, the scope of practice committee. This amendment changes that to two members of an organization that opposes the change. To make the selection of the two opponents. And that is what...
Yeah, of individuals or organizations opposed to the change.
Correct. Thank you.
Any discussion on the dash fives? Any objections to the dash fives? The dash fives are a part of Senate Bill 717. Can I have a motion to move it to rules, please? With no recommendation.
Can we discuss it? No.
Absolutely. Let's get the motion first.
Why no recommendation and why rules?
Rules because it's open and because we think we can make some changes that might make the bill palatable.
So it's just there's still some work, but our last day.
Absolutely.
Is, okay.
Yeah,
all right. It's not an intent to see it squashed.
It's not. I mean, the objection among many of the opponents of the bill at the moment is to using BME.
Right.
For a variety of reasons, but there are some clear acceptable other ones, like the Office of Health Policy and Research, but that brings along a significant fiscal. So
right.
It would have to go to Ways and Means if we did that. And we actually, I think, may have had an amendment ready to do that. So that would put the Ways and Means, it would be even more of a block.
And Mr. Chair, is there a problem with us giving it a recommendation if it's our sort of publicly stated goal not to kill it or not to see it die, realizing there's some work to do? But
well, the problem with the recommendation would appear to be a recommendation that it be done by BME.
Okay.
And that's a recommendation at least I'm not willing to make.
No, I understand.
Do we have a motion?
We do not have a motion, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 717 to the... does it have to go to the House floor first?
Well...
Yeah, you move it to the, that's right. You move it to the House floor with no recommendation, with a subsequent referral to.
I would move Senate Bill 717 to the House floor with no recommendation, with a subsequent referral to the House Rules Committee.
You want to talk?
Speak up.
Thank you.
Oh, to the amendment? Or
to the amendment.
I thought we already passed.
Not to the amendment. I'm sorry. To the
bill. To the amendment. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I will support moving this to rules. However, I would hope that. It does not language there. And on the off chance that we're not able to come up with a different alternative that has a reasonable fiscal that can actually get out of Ways and Means, I think there's enough choice, and this is a voluntary process to undertake, that I think it's worth perhaps pursuing the risk of putting it in the BME. So I would just put on the record that I would hope that we don't let this languish, and that at the end of this, even if we can't find another vehicle, keep it in the BME.
I will put that, I think that's appropriate to put on the record. I think we can amend this bill to move it in a way that makes some sense, and I certainly accept what you say. That's
thank you, Mr.
And even encourage it. Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would largely echo what Representative Kotek said, I believe that the purpose of this goal is good. I think that the bill in its current form is okay with me, even though it's not acceptable to some advocates. I think that what we're talking about here is an experiment, one that's not going to make everybody happy no matter what we do, one that's voluntary, one that really will come at, I think, no, the risks are not great. We may come back in 09 with a report from this committee that nobody likes, or that some members of, you know, some of the health professional organizations come back, say to us, this was a terrible process, it was biased, in which case we say, boy, that reflects poorly on the BME or whoever is helping facilitate it, and we don't adopt those recommendations. But I do think we have an opportunity here to give the 09 legislature a real head start on resolving some of these really tricky scope of practice discussions. So I very strongly hope that this bill does come out of rules, perhaps not with BME, but if we're not able to find an acceptable alternative, with staff support from BME.
Representative Gelson.
Thank you. And also, just for the benefit of the record, I too hope that this bill gets traction in rules. Having sat on this committee, which has been a tremendous pleasure, Mr. Chair, some of the more challenging parts really have been some of those scope of practice issues, and they've ranged from trying to understand what it felt like in family spats to issues that really are very complicated, and I think specifically of the prescribing psychologists and psychiatrists. And I think that it serves our efficiency and also the public interest to find the best way to deal with these scope of practice issues. So I look forward to seeing this conversation continue in rules, and I do hope to see a resolution.
And I'll be happy to put on the record what I'm going to try and create an amendment to do, and that's to find a way for this process to be under legislative oversight in the interim. Essentially make the point that anybody who wants a significant change in scope of practice in the next session needs to run this through an interim committee that does exactly this thing, that appoints a group like this and oversees getting them going. And that we'll obviously have some fiscal as well, but I think maybe less than the fiscal in the Office of Health Policy and Research.
Mr. Chair,
yes, sir.
Just a clarification. Your last comment indicates, or at least seems to imply, that this is not going to go anywhere out of rules, and that there ought to be a committee doing what this bill would actually have the BME do if it didn't get amended. Is that really the intent?
No, my intent would be to put an amendment in that makes this a formal process of seeking a scope of practice change.
To be conducted by an interim committee?
To be overseen by an interim committee, interim staff, something like that. I mean, I haven't been developing it yet, but I need to work on it. The interim legislative staff could oversee the process in the same way BME would oversee it in the bill. No, I'd like to amend the bill and move it.
Okay.
Absolutely. Okay. Ready for a roll call? Erin? If she's not here, she's excused. She's off in two other committees at the moment.
Representative Brooks.
Aye.
Representative Cannon.
Aye.
Representative Flores.
Aye.
Representative Gelson.
Aye.
Representative Maurer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Cochran.
Aye.
Vice Chair
Richardson. Aye.
Chair Greenlee.
Aye. 717 goes to the floor without recommendation, a subsequent referral
to
the Rules Committee.
As amended.
Yes.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, ma'am.
Could I
move
that we suspend the rules so that Representative Bonamici can vote on Senate Bill 717A?
I was too fast with the gravel here.
Gravel?
Hearing no objection. We have a motion to move 717 as amended with a dash 5 to, without recommendation to the floor, with a subsequent referral to rules.
Let me just look at the dash 5 real quick.
The dash 5s are Senator Manus Anderson's wording on how the opposition gets named.
All right.
Aye. We're all here. All right. I think we have agreement on Senate Bill 656, so let me open up a work session on Senate Bill 656. And Sandy, will you tell me where we are?
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 656A allows an optometrist to treat a patient with anti-glaucoma medication and to consult with an ophthalmologist under specified condition. It establishes that optometrists who prescribe pharmaceutical agents be held to the same liability standards as a licensed physician. We have already adopted the A4 amendments, and we adopted the A8 amendments, I believe it was on the 29th, our last meeting. We do have before us the A9s, the A10s, and the A11s that we did not discuss, but they should be in your folder from the last meeting.
And we have 15, is that right?
No, you're on the wrong bill.
I'm on the wrong bill. Sorry, guys. Don't go away. I'll get through this world in a minute.
I have not received any new amendments.
Okay.
Since Tuesday.
Sandy, what are the amendments we have in front of us?
Well, the A4s that we adopted, Mr. Chair.
On the combined medication.
Correct. And then the A8s added clarification to the required conditions that an optometrist consult with an ophthalmologist when treating the glaucoma.
Okay.
And the A9s, 10s, and 11s were Representative Gelser. And I believe, help me out here, Representative Gelser.
Representative Gelser, is the A, is the A12, which I haven't quite found yet?
I don't have it.
Oh, what did you say?
The last
9, 10, 11?
Yes.
They're, and they're, are they all separate?
Yes.
Yeah, 9 and 10 are 11 split in half.
That's right.
So
okay,
A11 is 9 and 10 put together.
So the A11s, if we adopt the A11s. Representative Gelser, you want to give us a motion?
Yes, I do. Yes, I would move, I'm sorry, it's been a long day. I would move the Dash 11 amendments to Senate Bill 656.
We have a motion to move the Dash 11 to Senate Bill 656. Are there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I just want to verify that, in fact, that is the, that's acceptable to both parties.
It's marginally acceptable.
Well, marginally acceptable, that is, in fact, the truth. Because I would accept a head nod, but
squeamish.
Want to join us?
Let's see.
It is definitely acceptable to the optometrist.
Can I ask the question of staff while she's on her way up? And I wanted to be sure, in terms of the A11s, when we talk about two medications, that combo medication
is one. Because we adopted that already, right?
Okay.
Are you asking if the A11s conflict with something that we already adopted?
I'm just trying to cohesively put together and make sure that we're all on the same page, and I'm interested in hearing from both of
and
our
and that's a combination, and the current way, if we adopt it this way, the combination counts as a single medication. We've adopted that, right?
We adopted it.
Yeah, the same pharmacologic agent should be considered one.
Shall be considered one. We did right. That in the A4.
So if we adopt the A11, to be clear,
right,
the combination counts as one medication, and the next medication would be the second medication.
That would be my understanding, Mr. Chair.
And it would be either two medications or one of these other conditions. Worsening, I mean, it will be still, if we go back to the original bill, either a secondary glaucoma develops, the glaucoma progresses despite the use of, now it would be two medications, right? And the things under section small b, it's progressive, there's a worsening of the patient's visual field as measured by standard threshold testing, reproducible worsening. And the other things in that Part B.
Correct.
Okay. Nan, how are you holding up on this one?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Nan Heim, representing the Oregon Academy of Ophthalmology. I think that there have been discussions between some of the ophthalmologists and some of the optometrists, which is a good outcome from this legislation already. And we do accept the two medications as a reasonable triggering point for consultation. The one concern that I think keeps us marginally acceptable, as I explained to you, Mr. Chair, earlier, is that the definition of a medication that has two agents as a single medication. As one of the ophthalmologists explained to me this morning, to him that meant that really it's four different medications if you change it, if you change the triggering point to two, or three.
Could be as many as four.
There actually there's one combination medication on the market now. These are all eye drops, just to clarify. And there's apparently one that is about to be on the market, so you could conceivably, in their eyes, have four. But we do accept the two. Have I confused everyone? I have confused myself. Thank you.
Wayne,
you're? Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Wayne Schumacher, Executive Director of the Oregon Optometric Physicians Association. And we do concur that we feel that the Dash 4 amendments, the multiple compound or multiple solution, is very important in there. So we do agree with that and would not oppose the bill if Dash 11s were adopted as well.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I wanted to thank both of you for working on this issue, but what I'd like to have into the record, and either one of you can do this or you can both do this, for the layperson, what are we actually doing here? What is actually going to happen in process to make sure that glaucoma, to the best of our ability, is not being, that there is the proper consult at the appropriate time? So could you run this, what is going to happen to a patient that one of your doctors is going to see, an optometrist? What is going to happen and when are they going to consult with the ophthalmologist? I'd like to just make sure we understand that clearly for the record, what's happening.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Kotek, I'm not a doctor, but in my mind, and in looking at this as long as we have looked at it, with what we have now, I don't know that there's going to be a significant change other than a definite definition of the trigger points for both parties, and it allows them to converse based on that. And I think if you listened to Dr. Tybalt's testimony, again, he's not here today, and I was accused of putting words in his mouth before, but I hope I'm not doing that. I think his big issue was the communication that this sets up. And I think in ophthalmology's mind, that's the importance of this bill. I would have to tell you that from our point of view, our docs have been doing this already. So I think, again, what it does is it reinforces the communication between the two professions on what the appropriate triggers are. That would be my definition.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kotek, the reason that we introduced this bill was that some of our members were finding that they were getting patients, glaucoma patients, at the point where they had already lost some vision, which the ophthalmologist felt didn't have had to have happened. So they really wanted to set up some standards, some guidelines for when at least a consultation should take place. Here's what's happening. Here's what's happening with the readings. Is it time for surgery? And it is. That's what it's about.
So, So what I'm hearing from Mr. Schumacher is this is current practice, but with greater clarification that the ophthalmologist was seeking. Is that a good interpretation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kotek, I think that it is current practice for many, that there was a problem that we ascertained in a survey of our members.
One last follow-up.
Please. Go for it.
I think the issue raised by Senator Carter around access and proper treatment for a particular population were very valid concerns, and I would hope that the communication that's been initiated by this bill continues to happen in the interim, and I would be very upset if we hear back that this isn't solving some of the issue out there for the small number of optometrists who aren't doing the proper consultations. Because whether, can't say how many that might be, but it's happening. So, just at whatever level. And so the goal is to help people have the proper treatment so the disease does not progress in a way that is detrimental to them.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kotek, I absolutely agree with you. I think what this bill does not do, it does not address the access. This is not an access.
Okay, guys. Representative Kotek, all I can say is it's because you're new to this process and you haven't had the experience either. It's clear to me that every bill we pass gets immediately implemented exactly the way we intended it.
No errors.
Thank you for allowing me to have those questions.
Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I wanted to follow along that same line. I think this has been an interesting discussion, and I think that the two things have been clear to me. There are a lot of very fine, most of our optometrists are very fine practitioners that are doing a good job taking care of their patients. I think the issue arises in those more unusual circumstances where you have someone that isn't making the right choices, and the consequences for those individual patients are pretty high. And so it's my hope that awareness has been created through this conversation, and that it will resolve that problem, and that we would hear back if there is demonstrated individuals that are losing sight that do not need to lose that, because I think I agree with Senator Carter that we need to be protecting, even if it's a small number, but hopefully this discussion will help to raise that awareness, because we should come back if it doesn't fix that perceived problem.
Yeah, I would I would put on the record that we just moved the bill over to rules that would have a process, and we would hope in this case would have worked to have these conversations far enough in advance so that we wouldn't be doing it on the last day that we can be acting on. I think it gives us more impetus than otherwise, as Representative Cannon said, to make sure we actually do something on 717. Do we have a motion on the floor?
We have a motion for the Dash 11s, Mr. Chair.
Is there any other discussion on the Dash 11s? Any objection? Dash 11s are moved into 656. Can we have a motion on 656?
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 656 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Any discussion on that motion?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I also want to weigh in, now that we're in the final passage of this bill. This has been first of all, there's some congratulations to go out, but there's another, I think, bigger point to mention some of the frustrations. This particular bill, and it sort of serves as a microcosm of some of the other scope of practice bills that we've had, but I've got literally neighbors on both sides of this issue, and this has been one of those very passionate issues, even to the point where I was at church, not last Sunday, but the Sunday before, happened to sit in the front row because that particular Sunday at 9 a.m. my daughter was singing in the choir, and I was even approached on this bill in church by a gentleman I had never met, but but very, very nice and pleasant. It was an optometrist, and so it was, I don't know if it was divine intervention or not, Mr. Chair, but he made a point. The point is the point didn't help me at all, but clarifies the need. And his point was, do what's right for the patients. And I thought, that is exactly right. You couldn't give better advice than that. And I guess my point for the record, Mr. Chair, is I have a political science degree and an MBA. I do not have a medical school degree. And so when we get in these situations, do what's right for patients, I agree. What is that? And that's why that bill that we sent over to rules is so vitally important, that somewhere in the wholesale process, there is objective vetting with medical professionals before a recommendation is made to this body. So you don't.
The problem with many of these issues is it's hard to find objectives.
Right.
I mean, we saw that with the psychiatrists and psychologists. We didn't have a single psychiatrist testified that they thought it would be okay for psychologists. And we had one out of hundreds of the psychologists suggesting this would be a problem. I mean, so hopefully this process can get some objectivity into that. Okay. Can we have a roll call?
Representative
Cannon. Aye. Representative Flores. Aye. Representative Gelson.
Aye.
Representative Howard. Aye. Vice Chair. Aye. Aye. House Bill, Senate Bill 656A as amended, goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. How about a carrier?
Mr. Speaker, Mr. Chair.
Well, we'll make you an expert. We'll give you an MPH by the time you're done. this committee. Thank you all very much for working this one as hard as you did. I'll close the public hearing on SB 656. I'm sorry, the work session on SB 656. I also comment that my personal ophthalmologist called me. He had less trouble getting to me than I've ever had getting to him. But it was very pleasant talking to him.
That's the longest appointment you had, right?
That's right. There was no copay. Let's open a work session for Senate Bill 591A. There is a amendment. Two amendments. Did we give an emergency clause amendment?
We did.
We have an emergency clause amendment because it turns out the folks are having huge problems. They report in their business, and if we pass an amendment, we'd like it to go into effect as soon as possible. So we have drafted it if it meets the committee's pleasure. But let's first talk about the A3s. Representative Richardson, could you give us some clue on the A3s?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee had the opportunity to meet on several occasions with representatives of both DBS and Kaiser, and we discussed financial situations that they might have that would justify the proposed doubling of costs. There was not information presented that I could actually attribute to justifying the cost increase. I mean, why go from 25 cents to 50 cents, for instance? Why not go to 40 cents or some other number other than it was apparent that the present schedule is inadequate to cover the costs of doing business for DBS, and Kaiser also indicated to their representative that their department is not making any money on this and is losing money at the current schedule. Anyway, we reviewed it. It was difficult to actually determine what to do other than it just didn't seem like it was the appropriate thing to do to just say, well, because you asked for things to be doubled, let's double them. And so the decision was reached that we could do two things if we made a minor, some adjustments. One is we could eliminate the unfairness of doubling the cost of large files. I mean, why would it cost 50 cents a page for a 200 or 300 page file when you're already there, you've already retrieved the file, and it's all there? And so the larger the file, there should be some volume discount. And the other thing was, what can we do to provide an incentive for quick turnaround time for providing the records? That's one thing that would be beneficial to those that are requesting the records. So the end result that is included in these amendments is that instead of going from $25 to $35 for the first 10 pages, regardless of whether it's one page or 10, that we'd go to $30, and then instead of just 50 cents a page for an unlimited number of pages, it would be 50 cents a page from page 11 through page 50, and then 25 cents a page after that. And then as far as an incentive to have quick turnaround time, an additional $5 bonus could be earned by the providers of the records. And by the way, although DBS is presenting this to us, this rule affects record providers all across the state. And so they're just one provider. And so what we do has effect on providers all over. And so the amendment also says that if the records are provided within 7 day business days following the request, then there's an additional $5 bonus. And so they would actually get to their $35 and have 50 cents a page if it's less than 50 pages if they can do the turnaround time within 7 business days. Now, that's 7 business days from the request, because if we said 7 business days from the date they received it, then we have no way for the recipient to know when that was received. And so by doing it 7 days from the request, there'll be a postmark on when the request was made, and then the date that the records get mailed back by the provider will count as complying with the 7-day requirement. And so if the request is made on June 1st, then that'll be on the envelope of the request date, and if there's a turnaround time within 7 business days and they get mailed out within 7 business days, there can be $35 charged. If it's 8 business days, then they can only charge 30. So the extra $5 is intended as an incentive to give a quick turnaround time, so at least we don't have people making the request and having to wait for 20 or 30 days. So that was what is included in the Dash A3 amendments.
Questions? Well, would you comment? Does this feel okay to you as the direction's going?
Mr. Chair, it feels...
You introduce yourself, please, for the record.
For the record, I'm Tracy Hammacher with DBS Health Information from Bend, Oregon. And does it feel good to me? I've been doing this since February, and I'm a rookie at this. So any change that moves us forward, it feels good to me. So... we're in agreement that we'd like to see this go forward and have some sort of change for our business. Be great.
Representative Broom?
Well, two things. First, a comment. If you've been doing this since February, you're only 1 month less experienced than a lot of us up here. So that's you know, so you're a pro. My question, I was going to ask Representative Richardson, but maybe I'll ask you, do the requests that that come in, do they by statute or do they just by happenstance always come in via mail? I would imagine there's also email requests and everything else. I just want to make sure that we're not hung up on a postmark necessarily, unless that's the only way that these requests can be made or are made.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Broom, the requests come in via mail mostly, sometimes via fax. You need to have an authorization that's signed by the patient, so you need to have that signature, which wouldn't come via email. So fax requests are received as well, yeah.
Thank you.
And if you find this part is a problem, you come back to the next session and
You might
see how to deal with it.
Yes, thank you.
Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're so quiet down there.
No, this is my hand. We heard testimony that this fee was only charged when the information was going to be used for the potential financial gain. I may not be putting it quite right, but I recollect very clearly that it was, in fact, I think the testimony was they were only authorized to charge up to this amount if the record was going to be used for litigation. I don't see that in statute. If that's the case, I want to really clarify for the record that it's the case, or maybe get my understanding of this clarified. Representative Richardson, maybe you can help me with this.
There is a process where for continuing care, physicians or providers do not charge one another when they request records. And so my understanding, and this could be clarified by Tracy if it's wrong, is that more than 50% of the records that are produced are not charged for, because they're continuing care from physicians and those kinds of things. Plus, if it's workers' comp, they have their own schedule, which is inadequate, less than these numbers. And if it's for disability, there's their own schedule, and that also is less than what is being charged here. So essentially, it's a cost shift to the private requesters that end up having to pay to make up for the loss or the cost of providing other records for free. So that's one of the reasons that the cost is so much here, is that it's actually carrying the freight for others as well. It would be good to deal with all of those issues, but because of the lateness of the session and the need for there to be some change, that may be something, and Sharon and I have discussed that we need to address during the interim, because why should SAIF and the disability people in DHS not have to pay a fair amount for their copies? But if we were to stick that in at this point, it probably would go to Ways and Means, and there would be a fiscal, and there will be no satisfaction for the company that deserves it.
Does the statute stipulate that these fees cannot be charged when it's to another health care provider? I understand that some of these have schedules of their own, but for workers.
No, these are maximum fees, and the others are paying lesser amount. Nobody has a problem with paying more than this. I mean,
well, Representative Cannon's question was, is there something in here that says if I go from Dr. A to Dr. B, and Dr. B needs hospital records of me to care for me, that would automatically be free? I think it's just by practice, is that right?
All right. So it may still be it is still the case that a hospital could charge up to this $35 maximum for health records that I request because I just want to know a little bit more about my health history, or I'm switching doctors and want to. It's not been their practice to do so, but they could under law.
I'm not sure if HIPAA has a provision that says that a patient can receive their records without having to pay. Is that, do you know if that's the case?
It doesn't say free.
Okay.
Right? HIPAA doesn't. I mean, HIPAA says that I'm entitled to the information in my record.
Mr. Chair, I believe HIPAA states that if a patient is unable to pay, they cannot be denied copies of their medical records. And all the health care facilities we work with don't deny patients copies due to inability to pay.
Thanks.
Senator Forrest?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Richardson. Thank you for your work, and Tracy, thank you for following back around with me. I really appreciate it. My question is in regard to within seven business days after the date of the request. Now, my experience in the law office is the date of request oftentimes is determined by the postmark and in a certain calculation from that point forward, although the date of the request actually could be, I suppose, interpreted to reflect the date on a letter of request, which is not the postmark. And oftentimes the language is inserted the postmark rather than the date of the request. So I'm just concerned about some lack of clarity or perhaps ambiguity.
Many of these records are requested by fax, so it's not just through a postmark. The extra $5 really comes to whoever's providing the records needs to be able to show that they complied. So a postmark on the envelope would be proof of when it got sent, regardless of whether the date on the letter was 4 or 5 days earlier than that. And so if I were DBS, I would be indicating the postmark, you know, by photocopy or whatever, and the date that we send it. And I don't know if it's going to be a big deal because it's over $5 anyway. You know,
yeah, which they waive anytime anybody argues about it.
And thank you. And I really don't want to make it a big issue, but I just want to put on the record that we are talking about if it's a mailed item, it would be from the postmark date. Right. Thank you.
Okay.
Quickly.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sure,
Representative Richardson, thank you for your work on this. I'm reading over the materials we received on earlier testimony and talked about conversations with the trial lawyers and State Farm, who represent the bulk of the requesters that we charge the fee to. Are they okay with this? I mean, I think it's been raised before. These costs will be shifted somewhere. It's not like, your insurance agency, for example, they don't mind getting charged more. They're just going to pass on the cost.
After we requested the amendments, I contacted representatives of both those groups just to let them know that we're working on the bill and that the number was going to come down a little bit. They both were pleasantly happy that that would happen because it is a savings for them. If it's a 200-page file, they will pay less than they would if the bill had just gone through.
And the $5 bonus?
That's fine. Bill was going to go through at 35 anyway.
It wasn't 35 anyway. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Can I have a motion on the A3 amendment?
Move the A3 amendments into SB 591.
Is there any discussion? Any objection? The A5s are a part of Senate Bill 5. The A3s are a part of Senate Bill 591. How about a motion on the A2s? This is clearly required for the preservation of the public peace, health, and safety.
Chair, I would move the A2 amendments into Senate Bill 591 because this is an emergency for certain individuals in this state.
For constituency
and bandits. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? The A2s are moved into Senate Bill 591. Now, how about a motion on the Senate Bill 591 as amended with the A2s and A3s?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 591 as amended by the A2 and A3s to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I will just note for the record that Representative Wisnett will be very pleased that we are being very kind to his constituent, because he barked at me saying, why were you picking on my constituent?
Tell him that it has to do with mosquitoes. He'll understand that.
Representative
Maurer.
Mr. Chair, I just need to note an actual conflict of interest with this bill.
Because
I will financially gain through it. Because we own a medical clinic.
Only if you decide to.
So when you see him wearing the Rolex next session.
Those Gucci loafers is what we're getting.
And I want to never be accused of not stating a conflict.
Yeah. If there are any attorneys here, they might want to mention a conflict as well. But at least one. At any rate.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair, as an attorney, from time to time we request medical records, and although there's really no conflict because we don't pay them, the client pays.
It's true.
But on the side of caution, I mention that.
Unfortunately, Mr. Chair, I cannot pass on my cost to anybody.
Has he requested any from you?
Yeah.
Well, never mind. You don't have to answer that. Are we ready for a roll call? Aaron?
Aye.
Senate Bill 591, as amended, goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and Representative Richardson will carry it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is the young man who was here the other day?
Yes, he's in the back.
Would you come up for a moment? Oh, incidentally, I do need to mention, I should have done it in the work session, there's a written testimony from St. Charles Medical Center.
Chair, Vic Piper with CVS Health Information from Portland, Oregon.
Several of us felt after the last hearing that we had abused you unnecessarily, and the extent to which we did, we're used to abusing lobbyists all the time. That's how. We really do want to apologize. We think you did a great job representing your organization. And,
I appreciate that.
Well, we want you to understand we were a little harder on you than we probably should have been.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for coming back.
Well, I think what it was is that there was a... I don't think anybody really expected that conversation to, you know, lead off in the direction it did. And he just happened to be in the chair at the moment that the conversation diverted from what everybody thought it might, and so.
Yeah, I mean, I was annoyed, you know, particularly, but I wasn't annoyed at them. I was annoyed at the hospitals for putting them up in the point position for something that really should have been the hospitals here talking to us, and that, I'm sure some of that brunt of that aggravation.
Well, we have a bag of candy over there.
As a morning gift.
I think the reason why it took that tack is that you folks just need to understand how the process worked. And I totally understand that.
I still think it should have been the hospital.
For the record, I don't know if we'll be bearing the cost of storing extra envelopes. So we'll see how that works out.
Thank you very much for stepping forward.
All right,
thank you.
Did I close that hearing yet?
I can do it again.
Let's close the public hearing on Senate Bill.
Work session.
I'm sorry, the work session on Senate Bill 591. And open a work session on Senate Bill 34. And the first order of business is, I understand, I thought we had adopted an amendment that we may not have adopted. Well, let's do that first. And what is that number? Is that
Mr. Chair,
one?
That is the A13 amendment stated 524, which... adds a section that the database become operative as soon as it's continuously operational 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Right.
And it also specifies that the Board of Pharmacy shall notify the Legislative Council when the database meets the requirement of subsection 1 of the bill. Basically, that's the real-time amendment, Mr. Chair.
Well, it's not. I mean, didn't really want to make that point. We've referred to it as real-time, but the board made it clear they're not talking about real-time in that. It's not. It's that some of the data into the board will be batch processed and might be a few days behind, but it's real-time in the sense that the inquiries could be made at any time, and that the board had no problem with that. So can I have a motion on the A13, please?
Mr. Chair, I move the A13 amendments into Senate Bill 34.
Thank you. Is there any discussion? Any objection? The A13s are a part of Senate Bill 34. Sandy, will you tell us? I'm sorry.
Can we? Thank you.
Oh, sure. I'll hold on a minute.
I had a final.
We have much
paper. Can I ungavel something?
I just need to. I got caught up in
this is a fat file. Here, I have an extra copy. Here comes one.
Thank you.
This is the continuous operation.
Correct.
Why don't you give me the extra one? Are we ready for? Is there any objection? I think I did gavel the A13s into Senate Bill 34. Sandy, can you tell us where we are now?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we last discussed Senate Bill 34, which requires the State Board of Pharmacy to establish and maintain an electronic database to collect and centrally store pharmacy records for controlled substances, which are Scheduled 2, 3, and 4 drugs dispensed throughout the state. Last time we talked about the A-12s, we had a section-by-section analysis of the A-12s. You had a copy of the A engrossed. Since that time, Representative Bonamici and Representative Richardson met with the stakeholders, went through the A-12s, did some revisions, and what you have before you are the A-15s. You should also have a hand engrossed of the A-15s, and I apologize that you didn't have enough time for comparison, but it is there to compare with the hand engrossed with the A-12s. Representative Richardson has volunteered to walk you through any of the changes if the committee so desires. But just as a footnote, you also have a fiscal impact statement in your current materials from today based on the A-13s. Fiscal did look at that. You will notice that it has triggered a fiscal impact with the A-13s, and you have just adopted the A-13s. This bill does not have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Fiscal has not had an opportunity to look at the A-15s, Mr. Chair, so they haven't even considered that amendment.
But on the basis of the A-13s, they confirm
clearly
Ways and Means referral is
correct.
Required.
Still in.
As did the co-chair that spoke to this morning on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Dennis, will you run us through the 15s?
First, let me say that those that met with Representative Bonamici, myself, and with Sandy, were Andrea Moyer with the ACLU
and
Meyer, and Tom Cowan with the Department of Justice and Paige Clark with the Board of Pharmacy. There were others who would have been happy to have been a part of that, but because of the time, rather than expand the group, we went with this group. There were other written suggestions that were presented to us. I'm going to lead you fairly quickly through the hand and grow section and point out the decisions that were made, and a lot of these were made as a result of the conversation we had in our last session here as a committee. So on page 1, where it says A or 12A and B, we changed the wording so that it will say the board may contract with a state agency or with a private entity to ensure the effective operations of the database. And then also we say that the board shall adopt rules for the operation of the electronic prescription drug database. And then at the very bottom of page 1, it says notifying patients that, and that leads us into page 2, or 1A, excuse me, where it says 24A through G. And then it explains that, carry that sentence over, that notifying patients that before a patient receives a medication authorized by a prescription for a controlled substance, information about the prescription will be entered into the database. They'll be informed that there's going to be a request to the database for information about the patient, and that the patient would be able to have information from the database at least once every 6 months. Now, the discussion that we had was, should this information take place in the physician's office, who's going to write the script, or at the pharmacy, who's going to fill the prescription? And it was something that you could continue to debate, because if the prescription, if the doctors were going to carry the responsibility to explain these things, then they could change the prescription if the patient did not want to have this prescription filled. But the difficulty is that the doctors, this would be adding to the things that they're responsible for, and not, and so anyway, to facilitate moving this ahead, it was decided that at least for now, the pharmacy, who has you signed for drugs anyway, will be responsible to assure that the patient is, before they get their prescription, that they understand that this is going to be in the database, and they're going to be checking this database. And so when they sign for the prescription, they will also be signing, indicating that they understand that there is this database and that they're now going to be a part of it because this is a controlled substance.
And then how that's done will be determined by rules.
Determined by the Board of Pharmacy rules. Okay, then, I have a little question. On the very bottom of 1A, it says, Section 4, it says, not later than 1 week after dispensing a controlled substance, a pharmacy shall report to the State Board of Pharmacy. You know, we didn't spend any time on that, but this committee could decide if 1 week is a reasonable thing or not. Okay. All right, we're on page 2. You see in the column on the left, 18A through D, we state that the information in the database is confidential and can be disclosed only as authorized by HIPAA regulations, which are the federal regulations that cover this. 22A and B state a current patient for whom the practitioner or pharmacist is prescribing or dispensing or is considering prescribing or dispensing a controlled substance. This is who the database relates to. And then at the bottom of that page, 28A through C spells out that upon request to an individual who is the recipient of the prescription of the controlled substance, that they shall be able to have copies or have a copy of what's on the database relating to them within 10 days of that request. It could be through them or through their agent. Any questions so far? Yes.
Thank you, Representative Richardson. Now, I'm relying on the Hammond Gross version with the Dash A15 amendments, and last time we were together, as was mentioned, we had looked at the Hammond Gross with the recommendation with the Dash 12 amendments, and does the work that you've done incorporate some of that work?
We took the Dash 12s, and that's what we went through. And so the changes we made were based on the Dash 12, so where there was no contention, or the Dash 12s still are here.
Thank you. I must have missed that earlier.
I did not say that. I'm glad you brought that up. All right. 37. I'm on page 2A. 37A through O deals with the maintaining of records and how these records should be accessible and to whom. And so it states that the Board of Pharmacy will maintain the records and that these records will indicate the identity of the person, the information of what is being prescribed, who's done the prescription, who's prescribing, and so forth, and records of details on all requests made by law enforcement, so for law enforcement purposes. So it will be able to be discovered who's seeking to access the database, but they won't necessarily, somebody who wants that information won't be able to find out who's on the database, but they could find out if law enforcement from the city of Salem has 100 requests, you know, they can, that access, that information will be available, but it won't disclose personal information that's protected. I'll go ahead and mention in 37 N, O, and P indicates that the Board of Pharmacy shall notify the Attorney General and individuals affected by any improper disclosure or release of information from the database. So if there is a glitch, as soon as the Board of Pharmacy becomes aware of it, they have a responsibility to notify the AG that this took place. The one thing that is not included in these amendments is how soon that should be done. And if it was the committee's decision, we could, by conceptual amendment or in the law they talk about amendment by interlineation, we could actually add a clause at the end saying within 10 days following said discovery if we wanted there to be some time. But at the present time, it just says they have to notify. It doesn't say when they have to notify.
Okay.
that ought to be a part of those rules as well.
Okay. All right. So on the bottom of 2A, it says 44A and B, data in the database that identify an individual patient shall be removed from the database within 3 years of the date, or at 3 years from the date the data was entered. Now, this doesn't say that any reference to the entry is going to be removed because we still want to be able to collect data. But any information that would identify the person will be removed. Okay? So it's not once a person's in a database, after 3 years of being not using these kinds of controlled substances, their name gets removed. That takes us to 2B, where the additions are 44C through L. And basically, this is what was discussed. What happens if... What liability is there for people that disclose information wrongfully? We still have the same high level of requirement of gross negligence. I mean, all these other things are named, but since essentially it's a gross negligence level as compared to simple negligence. But we've added to this a provision that was in the Dash 12s elsewhere that says that if there is this level of gross negligence that's met, then the person that's been aggrieved with this discovery... that those that made it will be subject to a civil penalty of $1,000 or actual cost, whichever is greater. So that if it's a poor person, but still there's been this disclosure of their information wrongfully, they don't have to come in and prove to a court that they have had a financial loss. There needs to be something, some consequence to the board or a pharmacy that makes this kind of mistake.
Mr. Chair. Yes. Representative Richardson, I assume these are all defined somewhere in statute, malice, intent, gross negligence. Okay.
All right. Any other questions? Okay, that takes us to page 3. Six A through G, basically we're talking about here an individual... may request that the Board of Pharmacy will ensure the removal of any erroneous information that has been placed in the database. So if your name is John Smith and you look at this because you have the right to get the access and you find out that there's entries in there for some John Smith that's not you and it's erroneous, then you can contact the Board of Pharmacy and explain what the situation is, and then it's up to them to go to bat and make sure that it gets corrected. And if they do not do that, there's an appeal process here where you could actually request a contested hearing on this, and at that hearing the board would have to show why the database was properly included, why they had not made or had not been mistake made. So anyway, that was left in to help assure that an individual has somewhere to go if the board says, no, we think that you are that same John Smith because you have the same birth date or something. And so there is a way to get the record cleansed if it's a problem, if there has been a mistake made. I don't think this will happen very often, but at least there's a provision there in case it does happen. Toward the bottom of that page, we have on line 20, it says, the Electronic Prescription Drug Database Advisory Commission shall consist of, and it's going to be 12 individuals, and instead of having the State Board of Pharmacy select them, if you go over to the next page, 3A, those 12 individuals are selected with a formula that has 3 selected by the President of the Senate, 3 by the Speaker, and then 6 by the Board of Pharmacy, and that will include 1 from physicians, 1 from dentists, 1 from nurses, 1 from NaturePass, 1 from the Pain Management Board, and 1 from the pharmacist. So they would select those professionals. So the goal is to make it more of a balanced board and to remove the appearance that it could be stacked by any board of pharmacy. So anyway, that would help assure that there would be a fair and balanced board. That takes us to page 4. By the way, this board is discussed in the first half of that page, and they're not paid. If you look at line 11, they're not compensated, but they would be reimbursed for actual necessary expenses. They'll meet once a year or more frequently as needed. Takes us down to lines 26A through the end of the page. And essentially, what we... A through X. And here it indicates that if there is a violation of these rules, then a practitioner or pharmacist who has violated this is subject to a civil penalty not to exceed $10,000. It was before civil or criminal. Both were in there, and it said civil penalty of $10,000. And so the criminal provisions have been taken out, and now it's a civil penalty that can be assessed by the Attorney General, but not to exceed $10,000, because we felt that it would be more appropriate for the Attorney General not to have to, if I'm going to charge you anything, it's going to be $10,000 per occurrence, because there could be different circumstances that led up to it. It may be incompetent hiring or some other problem, but it would have to be, you know, pretty serious for them to inflict the fine, but there is this limit, and they can go up to that limit but not exceed it. So it's no longer any wording relating to criminal actions for violation. And then on page 4A, section 10, it reiterates that a pharmacist may not refuse to fill a valid controlled substance prescription presented to the pharmacist solely because the pharmacist could not access the information on the computer. If the database is down, you can't say, I'm sorry, I can't go online, and therefore you're not going to get the prescription filled that you need. And so if they can't access it, they still are to fill the prescription. Those are the amendments, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Representative Richardson. How does the Board of Pharmacy feel
about these? Are these the amendments? Senator Morissette, would you like to comment on them as well, please?
Thank you for hanging in with us.
It's our last day, so we're trying to pace ourselves.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Bill Morissette, Senate District 6.
Paige Clark, Oregon Board of Pharmacy staff.
Tom Cowan, Department of Justice.
Thank you, Chair and Committee. We very much appreciate the work that has gone into all of these carefully thought-out amendments, and we really are very grateful for the little subcommittee's time and efforts in doing this, and this committee as well, going through a rather arduous process with this bill. And we find that while probably our original language we thought certainly handled many of these issues, we very much appreciate the issues that were brought to the table, and we very much appreciate how you all have brought them forth, and we can support these as they are written. Thank you very much.
I have nothing further other than to thank Representative Richardson for his extremely hard work.
I knew we'd get the attorneys on the job. Got
a lot of
it. Man. Senator Morrison.
I also appreciate the hard work, Representative, and all of you who are serving, and the thoughtfulness, and hopefully we will have a satisfactory result of this when the discussion is finished.
We all hope it will be satisfactory. Yeah. Since we're not all sure what satisfactory means.
Well,
thank you very much.
If it moves, it will be satisfactory.
Can I have a motion on the A-12s, please?
15.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash A-15 amendments to Senate Bill 34A.
Okay, will you get her? Get Donna Meachie. She doesn't need to be here for the amendment.
No.
Does she want to comment on the amendment?
I don't know. She said that 34, she wanted to be here.
Okay. Let's stand at ease for a moment. Good job, guys.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you.
The A15s? Is that right?
Yes.
The A15s to 34. Is there any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Yes, ma'am.
I apologize that I wasn't here. I'm in another committee.
We were happy to wait
but
for you.
But I thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that. I was involved in at least some of the discussions on the A15s. I'm going to support this. This is a which motion is pending to adopt the A15? We'll support the motion. I do still have concerns about the fiscal impact. I understand it's a motion to send it to Ways and Means. So I will be supporting it, but I continue to have concerns about making sure that the security and privacy are maintained and that there's funding to pay for this to make sure that it's the system that's going to maintain the security and privacy that Oregonians deserve and do the work that it's supposed to do. I don't think we can save dollars on this. It has to be done correctly, so that's why I'm supporting referring it to Ways and Means and trying to get that fiscal taken care of.
I think LFO agrees with you from their statement. So, all right, is there any objection to the A15 amendments? The A15s are a part of Senate Bill 34. I'm going to take a motion to move it to Ways and Means with a DPAS recommendation.
I'll make that
as
motion.
Amended.
Mr. Chair, I would move that SB 34A be moved to the floor with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
To the floor with a DPAS recommendation.
With a DPAS recommendation and a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Is there any discussion?
Thank you.
Anyway, we can start down this line.
Mr. Chair, I'll start. I don't have much to say. I appreciate the work that Representative Richardson and others did to put some of these sideboards on it. I think that's an improvement to the bill. I think this is a really important program. I'm a bit flummoxed by the whole fiscal situation on this, the fact that it began with the recommendation, then that got removed, and now it's back on, and yet the fiscal impact, according to the most recent fiscal analysis, is still less than the one it began with, at least if I'm reading it correctly. So why that triggers it suddenly going down a Ways and Means, this whole process is a bit mysterious. I wouldn't say it's transparent to me, much less to the public, so I am concerned about that.
Fiscal was never removed.
The
it came to us with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and that never has been removed.
I understand, but I guess I think there was a representation, at least, that LFO had determined that subsequent referral was perhaps not necessary. At some point, they issued a revised fiscal impact statement that said they didn't think that Ways and Means actually needed to get it, and now they say Ways and Means does need to get it, and I'm glad it's going to Ways and Means, because I think the bill can continue to be improved, and I haven't been satisfied that these fiscal issues are have all been addressed. Nevertheless, it's just there's some contortions there that have not been entirely.
This is the problem of you being new to the process. It's clear to me after three that everything that LFO and the Ways and Means Committee does is perfectly logical and inherent and always works to the best interest of the public. Are you sure that, Representative Flores?
Oh, and I would say the same thing for committee work.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair, and I would just pick up on that comment. You know, I certainly understand the need for this particular project and to focus on the problem with doctor shopping and marketing those drugs on the street. I understand that. And I think that does have a social benefit. By the same token, however, I certainly do understand the privacy concerns, the development of the database with medical record prescription drug information, and I appreciate the concerns brought forward by the ACLU and the Oregon Medical Association, and certainly appreciate the fact that Ms. Meyer from the ACLU sat down and drafted some of the amendments that we're incorporating here on a bill that she really does hate. And, you know, I think, you know, that's going above and beyond. But I think it was building some nice sideboards. And, you know, the contradiction here and weighing the balance, I guess it's interesting to develop this government database with all this information as opposed to the opportunity to check a database with sexual offenders on it, you know, has me a little bit in the grip where we can do one and not the other. And On the other hand, in my personal situation here in the legislature, you know, advocating that we do need to develop database so that we can protect the security of our citizens, let alone our children, and I have concerns about this privacy issue on our medical records that's really kind of got me hung up. So I'm supporting the bill, and I'm frankly glad it's going to Ways and Means to have the proper discussion on do we have the money to build it, bring it to real time, and to do all the things that it's supposed to do. So, thank you, Mr. Chair.
That's a good thing.
Well, I just wanted to also thank Ms. Meyer for doing the hard work to come up with ways to make changes to the bill. And although ACLU does not support the bill, they've made it better. So thank you for doing that. I think this is a challenge to the board to really, honestly, get your plan much clearer. I don't think we would have been having all these fiscal conversations if it had been a lot clearer from the get-go. And just want to thank Representative Richardson and Representative Bonamici for putting this together so quickly. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to make another comment because it, and again, this is in part because of my absence during the discussion. I did not understand that this was going with the DOPAS recommendation. I'm going to give it a courtesy vote in light of that, and if it does make it to the floor through the Ways and Means process, I may change my mind after some thought. So I just want to make that clear for the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know that it's been clear on this committee that I don't care a lot about privacy medical records.
Yes, you've made that abundantly clear.
No, to the contrary, I've been fairly clear on another bill around that issue, which I know has puzzled some of you because I feel very strongly that this is a very good bill. And I do appreciate that the bill has been made better, and I share the concern. I want it to be done the right way. I want the information that's within it to be protected, and I want the information to be used appropriately, and I appreciate the concerns that Ms. Meyer and the Oregon Medical Association have raised. For me, this bill is so important, not just because of the issue of sale and trafficking, but I am especially concerned about the cycle of addiction that happens with prescription drugs, which is one of those issues that we so rarely talk about and that we have very few tools to look at. And in these cases, you have individuals that start out having pain, their medications are prescribed to them, and they become drug addicts, and they don't know it, and their families don't know it, and they haven't done anything wrong. They've taken the medications that have been prescribed to them by their doctors. I see this as a tool to help physicians and to help those individuals whose lives and whose families' lives are destroyed by these things and who may eventually die because of these addictions and not have their underlying medical concerns addressed. So I do hope that it's a very serious challenge for the Board of Pharmacy, and we're placing a lot of trust in the Board of Pharmacy and moving forward. And if there are issues with security, I will be the first to support sanctions and work to make it better. But I do think we need to move forward. I hope this does not languish in Ways and Means. I hope this is something that we send there, that gets assigned to a subcommittee, and that it comes out to the floor sometime in the next couple of weeks before we go home. This is a very important bill for the people of Oregon. It's an especially important bill for those Oregonians who are suffering with an addiction that they often don't even know that they have. So I will be voting to support this.
I want to put, I guess, my comments on the record. I if this were a vote to send the bill to the floor in its current form, I would be opposed, and I would speak against it. I suggested a motion with a DOPAS recommendation because I believe that's what the committee desires, and at least most of the time I think the function of the chair is to make sure things happen the way their committee desires it to happen. So that was my recommendation, to send it with a DOPAS recommendation. If it gets to the floor in this form, I will probably oppose it on the floor. But I think this is the right motion at this time. I think we can trust Senator Morissette and his colleagues to keep on it in the Ways and Means Committee. And I think it'll have a fighting chance in that committee to come out. Bill, we can trust you on that. Is that all right? Sure. Any other discussion? We have a motion. Representative Maurer, you're the only one that hasn't commented.
Well, He's so tall, he just...
We can give you a bell down there.
I need a bell. And my only comment is I want to say my appreciation to Ms. Meyer and her efforts on this. To be quite frank, I was not expecting the dialogue that we had over the course of a week and a half or 2 weeks, and it was appreciated immensely. And I think that this is good for the people of the state of Oregon, and for those people that are addicted, it's a tool that hopefully will help them down the road, because it's not for the physician, it's not for the pharmacist, it's for the patient ultimately. And hopefully that is the intent in which it is moved forward. But I do support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
I also would like to thank those that provide the information, Ms. Meyer and Mr. Cohen and Dr. Paige Clark, and also Claudia Black. It was easier to get things done when we had written information provided by people that have opposing viewpoints, because it allows you to actually read how they view the same issue from different viewpoints, and then you can say, okay, that makes sense, or, well, I understand where it's coming from. But anyway, we were able to get through the process because of the time and expertise that they had and presented. And so I appreciate very much your time and effort, all of you. And happy to move this forward with this vote.
Thank you. Representative Bruin, I think you're the only one who hasn't made a comment. You want to put something on it?
Yeah, there's been such eloquent testimony on this. I'm just happy that this bill is moving finally.
So Senator Moore said. Okay, we have a motion on the floor to move Senate Bill 34 to the Ways and Means Committee with a new pass recommendation as amended. Would you call the roll, please?
Aye.
Representative Brown.
Aye.
Representative Hamm.
Aye.
Representative Flores. Aye. Representative Gelson.
Aye.
Representative Powell.
Aye.
Vice President.
Aye.
Aye. Senate Bill 34 moves to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Recommendation as amended.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move to suspend the rules to allow Representative Bonamici to vote on Senate Bill 591.
Is there any objection to that motion?
I have a question. Did you adopt the A2s and the A3s?
That's ancient history. I don't even remember.
Okay. I vote aye.
Okay.
Thank you.
The aye vote is recorded. Do you want to check in your phone?
I am. I think we have to do this.
Correct. You want to verify?
Yes.
I'll move ahead with the next.
Okay,
great. Yeah, let's close the work session on Senate Bill 34.
We needed to acknowledge Andrea's testimony.
We'll reopen the work session on Senate Bill 34 and acknowledge some written testimony from Andrea Meyer and...
And then from way back May 4th, we got written testimony from DHS Karen Wheeler that provides some good background information.
Okay.
Thank you.
Close the work session on Senate Bill... Before, there's a little bit of confusion here because...
We saw the quorum.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's an amendment to Senate Bill 717 that I think would improve its chances in the Rules Committee, and I forgot to adopt it. It was my amendment. And we need to find out what the procedure is, see if we can reopen it. Add that amendment, if that's what the desire. That would be the amendment that takes out the evidence-based practice center, which will definitely create a fiscal, whoever has it, that will kill it.
If you have six votes, you can.
So we need six.
So two-thirds majority to suspend the rules.
Yeah.
Can I do it? We're finding out. The question is, can I do it today? And since there isn't any other day.
You can do anything.
We had an announcement from Speaker today that were a memo that there was no more 24-hour notice required.
Well, yeah, we passed the bill. So the question, can I reopen one that we passed, reconsider that vote, and then do an amendment, and that, she's checking with Ramona. It's a little complex. Let's open up a session on Senate Bill 337A. And let's find out where we are on 337A. We have some amendments. There, I think. Is that the -8 amendments we're talking about?
Yes, that's correct.
The A8 amendments. That's the one that tries to get the language of those different parts consistent. And have the parties had a chance to look at that A? What are we doing? 337 at the A8 amendments. They work okay for you? Claudia, okay with you? Yeah. I guess all parties are okay. The A8 amendments. So, yes, let's have a motion on the A8 amendments, please.
Mr. Chair, I move the A8 amendments into Senate Bill 337.
Is there any discussion? The major force of the A8 amendments is to make the language consistent on page, I think it was original page 3 of the bill.
And you do have a hand that grows with the A8, just that one page, so hopefully it reads a little fluid for you.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. We had so much discussion about this particular section, and I'm only looking at the amendment this minute for the first time. Would it be possible to have a moment or to have someone walk through?
Well, the intention is to get the language in 5A and the language in 5B consistent about when the board needs to do what it is it needs to do. And it's to also put in the 5A, are you looking at the Hannah Gross page?
Yeah.
To put in, rather than say they may not publicly disclose it unless, rather to say the shall publicly post if. So it's to make it a positive duty to post it on their website, if the claim resulted in all that language, a judicial finding, admission liability, a money judgment, award, or settlement. And then it's used the same language down below that there are two things in the language down below. In 7D, it's to put the conditions when the board may remove from their website a reported claim. And then if these things don't happen, and then to add in that line 13A and D the same language that's up in line 6, C and D, B and C. I think the only substantive change is the wording of the shall rather than the when they shouldn't. You want to take a
shot at it?
Yeah. Can we have some of the folks who actually worked on this amendment come up? The gnome of Beaverton's not here. Oh, here he is.
Yeah,
he is here.
Mr. Chair, can we have the provenance of that?
Yeah. Mr. Chair,
term of endearment.
Kotak.
Yeah.
Is no basis for that.
Just for the record, Mr. Chair, I'm a Tolkien fan, so, you know.
We know how powerful the gnomes of Zurich are in terms of managing international finance, and I just equate the gnome of Beaverton to being that powerful in the health field.
Well, at least you didn't call him the Travelocity gnome.
Bruce, you want to take any credit for these amendments?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Bruce Bishop, appearing on behalf of the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. The Dash 8 amendments respond to the committee's direction yesterday that an affirmative responsibility be put on the board to post information on its website about judicial findings or admissions of liability. That's the fundamental change in the Dash 8s over the previous versions, and that was an issue that Representative Cannon raised in the discussion yesterday.
Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, my name is Kathleen Haley, and I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Board of Medical Examiners. I think it does put it in the affirmative, and it also allows that even if information is not publicly posted, it would be available through the board, and also clears up that issue of whether or not we would post the information on allegations that we were concerned about earlier. So I think it addresses everyone's concerns. Sure. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, for the record, Scott Gallant, Oregon Medical Association. I understand that's protocol. We support the amendments and would hope the committee would adopt them and move the bill with the due pass recommendation. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Cannon, are you ready on this one?
Yeah, I have a question. Ms. Bailey said something about occasions when something wouldn't be posted, yet the information would still be available, just not posted. Did I hear that correctly?
Chair Greenlick, Representative Cannon, you did. And I'm looking at the Dash 8s, the line 9 of that, that says that even if the board isn't publicly posting that information, the board would have the obligation to make it available.
Mr. Chairman, yeah. Where there's not a judicial finding or so it is consistent. I'm sorry, Scott Gallant, with your direction.
Right, and then a follow-up question. Originally, this A and B was a sort of cascading disclosure where if you were posting something under A, then you would disclose more under B. I think that was the case. So how do these relate now? They look almost. I try to understand what's our direction to you to make them parallel. What is the effect of B? How about that's my question.
Chair Greenlick, Representative Cannon, the effect of the Dash 8s on B are that the board would be able to allow to make available the information on allegations, and that's not the way it was in the A engrossed.
In fact, the A engrossed said they couldn't.
Okay. All right. I think this is an improvement.
Okay. Do we have a motion on that? Dash 8. Thank you very much.
We do. Representative Richardson placed a motion for the A8.
Any further discussion on the A8? Any objections to the A8? The A8 are part of Senate Bill 337A. Can I have a motion on the bill as amended?
Mr. Chair, move Senate Bill 337 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Is there any discussion on that amendment, on that motion? Can we have a roll call, please?
Aye.
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 Aye. Senate Bill 337, is that right?
Correct.
Senate Bill 337A as amended goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Curia? I'll carry it. if you would bear with me now, I'd like to do a little dance, which will take a little tapping, a little soft shoe, on Senate Bill 717. I would first like to ask...
Can I have a script?
Yeah. Well, you need the member. You need the member to make the motion.
Yes. Would somebody please make a motion to suspend the rules?
Mr. Chair, I would love to dance. Mr. Chair, I move the rule.
Don't dance, don't ask.
Be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on Senate Bill 717.
Representative Maine has moved. I'm not good at reading scripts.
Okay.
Representative Kotek has moved the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on Senate Bill 717.
And you can do it under no objection.
Is there any objections? I'd like to reopen that. We now need a second motion, right?
Right.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Maine gets...
Yes, right. Mr. Chair, I move we reconsider the vote by which we move Senate Bill 717
with a due pass recommendation to the due pass as amended to the floor.
With a subsequent referral to rules?
With a subsequent referral to rules. Correct.
Right.
Thank you.
Representative Kotek has moved that we reconsider the vote by which Senate Bill 717 V V? No.
The
717 was A was moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. To rules, I'm sorry. The subsequent referral to rules.
And I stand corrected, that was without recommendation.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. Without recommendation to the floor with a subsequent referral to rules.
Erase.
Well, thank you.
We need to take a vote. Is there any discussion?
Yeah, is there any discussion? Those are the opinion that we should reconsider the vote by which we did all that stuff.
Yeah.
Please answer aye.
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 The motion passes.
Okay, now open a work session again.
Open a work session on Senate Bill 717A. And what I would like is a motion on the dash A6 amendments.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash A6 amendments to Senate Bill 717.
Is there any discussion on that?
Mr. Chair, only to say that the reason for these amendments was to attempt to avoid incurring a fiscal that we only became aware of after the bill had left the Senate, and so it was not caught by LFO over on the Senate side. This relating to the evidence-based center at OHSU. The point is not that the report delivered to the legislature would be non-evidence-based. I think we still very much hope that it does rely on evidence, but only that it does, those who write the report will not necessarily need to get that evidence from a particular place that was going to charge $10,000 per report.
It isn't the dash twos. It's the dash A6s that we need.
Yes, dash A6s.
Yeah, okay, that was... And its only function is to remove that line. We did hear in the testimony or after testimony that those reports would cost about $20,000 each. And if there were even as many as five or six of them, it would make it $100,000 that I'm sure the BME would be happy to absorb, but we might not want to ask them to do that.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
A follow-up to that, and if this amendment didn't pass, then I would be looking for a new job to do research for the evidence base. I probably could come in a little bit under that.
I believe I could get you that job, actually. I think you'd be good at doing that stuff.
A point about the amendment is that the fact this is not removing the request or the research about evidence base is that place, and that Representative Ken and I agreed that the language prior to that, in that section, by inference, talks about you would be remiss not to address evidence based practice in your report.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's requiring that specific
organization,
that specific organization do that report.
Yeah.
And that's a standard process. And that still may be the way it comes out. But
yes.
We don't want it as an anchor to 717.
Right.
Is there any objection to Amendment A6? Hearing number 86 is added to Senate Bill 717A. Now, another motion.
Chair, I would move Senate Bill 717A as amended to the House floor. Excuse me.
As amended to the House floor with a due...
No, it was without recommendation to rules.
Yeah, but it's
it
needs to be to the House floor with a subsequent...
Right, but I was telling you it's not a due pass. It's a without recommendation.
Thank you.
That's right.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Harper, I would move Senate Bill 717A as amended without recommendation to the floor with a subsequent referral to rules. Ethics rules or whatever it's called.
Thank you. Any discussion on that motion? Could we have a roll call, please?
Representative Bonamici, excused. Representative Brown.
Aye.
Representative
Kent. Aye.
Representative
Flores. Aye. Representative Yeltsin, excused. Representative Fowler.
Aye.
Vice Chair
Hogan.
Aye.
Vice Chair Richardson. Aye. Chair Green. Aye. Close the work session on Senate Bill 717. Thank you for allowing me to...
Thank you for the dance, Mr. Chair.
It's very pleasant. I now open a work session on Senate Bill 145. Sandy, where are we with this bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 145 is changing the name of the Diversion Program Supervisory Council to the Health Professionals Program Supervisory Council. It increases the council membership from 5 to 7 members. We have before us the Dash A8 amendments. And I believe
we haven't adopted any amendments up to now, right?
I have no indication that we have, Mr. Chair. My records do not indicate it. The parties were instructed. We were not able to hear this bill on Tuesday because the amendments were not ready. As you'll recall, last Thursday, the parties were instructed to go out, go and do good things, fix the bill. What you have before you are the Dash 8 amendments, which, my understanding, the parties are okay with this bill. You also have a hand engrossed with the amendment. It does some modifications with language as far as instead of a report to the board, it says the board submit a written report to the board that contains. It also excludes, currently the bill reads all records. I'm on page 2 of the hand engrossed, section 5. The original bill says all records of the health professionals program. And the meetings were added to that, and those that statute are the public meeting requirement statutes. There's added some new language that references also exemptions and disclosures from the current statute, the diversion program statute, which is ORS 677-615. There's also Section 8 exempts, adds the supervisory council to the exemptions under the public meeting statutes, which public meeting statutes are 192.610 to 192.690. It also establishes an effective date of January
1, 2009. Sandy?
Yes.
Madam Wisher?
Yes.
Thank you. On page 2A, the reference to the Federal Register there, what is that?
The Federal Register on 2A, that is the confidentiality, Federal Health and Human Services confidentiality for drug and alcohol abuse patients. So it's federal regulations that it references back to.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Could we have, Sally, could you join us again? Somebody? No, you, not him. Oh, all right, we'll take him.
Good afternoon, Chair Green.
I was commenting earlier in the day to Mr. Gallant how pleased I was with his new assignment at the board. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, my name is Kathleen Haley, and I'm the executive director of the Board of Medical Examiners. With me today is Professor Bald. She's an emeritus professor of political science from Willamette University, and our former public member who was involved in the development of this bill toward including mental health services, and she was kind enough to join us this afternoon. We did want to thank Representative Kotek for working with us on the amendments, as well as the Medical Association. And I think that this does capture what we were trying to do, with the one exception that it does exempt the whole meetings of the Health Professionals Program from the public meetings, public records law. And if the committee is comfortable with that, we can try it and see how it works. And then if there's a problem with that, we can come back to you in the future. So I appreciate everyone's efforts on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gallant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Scott Gallant. I'm the Associate Executive Director of the Oregon Medical Association. I, too, want to thank Representative Kotek for guiding us through this process. She was exhausted through it all. While I agree technically there, in our discussions, there's a flaw, we can live with the amendments. We like the amendments as they are. And if there are problems, we too will come back and support further changes to the statute. So I would respectfully request the committee to adopt the A-8 amendments and move the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I just want to say thank you to the board and to the OMA. You were all on your best behavior and came up with this yourself. It's nice when those kind of work groups happen. I'll confess, I still have some concern about the implementation date, but I'm assuming that is necessary just in terms of getting it going, whatever tensions might be happening. You need some downtime, apparently, before you start this, so I'm going to defer to the board and everyone else on that, but, you know, that's time that we can't be helping folks, so I don't know if you have any comments.
Mr. Chair, if I may, Scott Gallant, Oregon Medical Association. I believe the date is at the recommendation of the chair, and I go along with the chair every time. Thank you.
The date was a compromise.
I'm all for compromise, Mr. Chair. Just noting my concern.
No, I mean, is there anything that would stop this from going forward under the current law faster if you voluntarily decided to? I mean, the major thing is to add mental health services to the services available to impaired physicians.
It would, Mr. Chairman, Scott Gallant, Oregon Medical Association. Actually, implementation would be, I'm assuming the board will set up the process to have this program become operative on probably January 2nd, because technically the bill does say that these provisions become effective on January 1st, 2009. We agree with that date. In our opinion, the HPP board and program will, in fact, need considerable amount of time to set up the implementation process for it.
Okay. I'm sorry I asked that question, I think. are there other...
Yeah,
we don't have a motion before us yet.
Mr. Chair, can I just, address it to Representative Kotek? I'm glad that that folks sort of agree on this amendment. That's nice. But it's not clear to me entirely what the amendment does. Again, getting these sort of last minute. Can you describe what are the implications of adopting this amendment?
Representative, that's an excellent question. I am not the best person to ask that question to. Maybe the board?
Chair Greenlick, Vice Chair Kotek, Representative Cannon. Essentially, and I'm looking at the dash eights here, it exempts the council and medical director when they make a report, and I'm looking at line 7 of the dash.
You have a hand in gross version. Would that make it easier?
That would make it maybe easier for all. So I want to be sure for the record, my name is Kathleen Haley, and I'm the Executive Director for the Board of Medical Examiners. These amendments, and if we look at page 2 of the hand engrossed, the Council and Medical Director are required to report sexual violations to the Board. This amendment would allow that they can only make one report but cannot be further examined about that initial report without a court order or the consent of the licensee. And here I'm looking at lines 32A through D.
And then, on page 2.
On page 2. Still on page 2, section 5, the records and meetings of the health professionals program would be exempt from the public meetings, public records law. Going on line 37A, further notes that case reviews, deliberations, and communications are again exempt from the public meetings, public records law. And then if we go to page 2A at the top, it exempts from disclosure members, employees, contractors, and past or present clients of the council for having to make that disclosure requirement. And that disclosure requirement in 677415 requires licensees of the board to report their fellow licensees who may be having problems that would be a violation of the Medical Practices Act. And then 45A through H was agreed upon by the parties because it is already in federal regulation. The program already operates in that method as it treats substance use disorders. It would now also apply to mental health disorders. So the board would have to get a court order in order to get those records, or anyone. And then if we turn to page 3, I think the change there is simply and is to exempt the meetings of the council from the public meetings law.
The only thing new on that section 8 is that bold is tight.
That's correct.
The rest is in existing section.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. And we had thought we'd look at deliberations, but meetings was the language. And again, we'll try to see if that works. And then on page 3A, the effective date is January 1, 2009.
Thank you. So we're sorry about the whole rush process at the end.
I understand.
Just got a bit trapped in the time.
Well, Mr. Chair, I just want to thank Ms. Haley for the review, and I appreciate the representative being thorough. My impression has been there's been some concern about ensuring the privacy to really make this program work. And are you anticipating any unintended consequences of this kind of restriction on disclosure that you have any concerns about that we might want to remember to look back on? I'm just curious.
Chair Greenlick, Vice Chair Kotek, I'm not. There's never been any breach of the confidentiality of that program by any entity. My only concern is about the meeting itself and not being as transparent in state government as we'd like to overall, and that's the piece I just want to take a look at over the interim. Thank you.
That word, that's a one-word piece that maps on. No, you were suggesting deliberations would be a better term than meetings. Where is that?
Line 34, page 2.
Is that where it is? Page 34?
Page 2. Chair Greenlick.
On page 2, line 34.
In the hand engrossed, I think it's on page 3, line H.
Yeah.
Oh, no. With regard to that.
Not line H. Oh, page 3, line H. Your preference would be deliberation. Scott, is that your preference as well?
Mr. Chairman, to be honest, no one's accused me of that. That is what we agreed to in our discussions.
And you're okay with...
But I am fine with meetings. I mean, to be honest, as you know, but in our discussions with Kathleen and Dr. Watt, we had agreed to proceedings. So I'm fine with the amendments as drafted with no changes, but we agreed to use the word proceedings. Deliberations.
I mean deliberations. We could have a conceptual amendment to the amendment.
If they feel that ought to be done, then let's try and make it as good as possible, and so I'd be happy to amend. Do you have a motion?
We do not yet have a motion.
There would be a motion to amend the dash.
Can we amend the minutes before they're accepted?
Probably not.
Can you
want to amend the amendment?
Yeah, the one word conceptual.
Right.
Okay. Where is the amendment? Where is that on so the dash 8 amendments, not the...
Line 11.
Right.
Line 11. Line 11 of what?
Page 1.
Page 1.
No. Page 2, line 12.
It's the second mention.
Sorry. Mr. Chair, we have to move these amendments before we can...
Well, Sandy's saying we amend them. We do a conceptual amendment to change the meetings on page 2, line 12 of the amendment to deliberations.
Is that a motion?
If there's a motion for that.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we amend the dash A8 amendments, page 2, line 12, change meetings to deliberations.
Is there any discussion?
I have a question.
Yep.
One discussion.
Where on the engrossed version are you
trying
to make
three.
Page 3, line 8. 14. Thank you. And Mr. Chair and colleagues, I would just note that on the beginning of that entire section that this is included in around the HPP, it's interesting. Some places say deliberations, some say meetings, some say hearings. I think it depends on the context of the body making the having the conversation. So.
Is there a difference in the sense of deliberations here and in the first place that Representative Bonamici found it for us? Can you find it again? Is that
page 1-8, line 11?
And then the gross is on page 2, line 34.
That's right, just where we add meeting
right.
On line 34. Is this a different context than the one later, or should that be both be deliberations?
Chair Greenlick, I'm lost at this point.
Okay.
So,
you have the hand engrossed in front of you?
Yes.
Look at line 2, I'm sorry, page 2, line 34, where the term is meetings, and it's also about the public disclosure.
Well, I think it's a different operative statute.
Okay.
Because in section 8, I'm going to stay on the hand engrossed. So page 3, where we have the section 8 there where there's the bolded additional language. Mm-hmm. 192.690, that's the public meeting law, is my understanding.
Oh, right.
So the other one on page 2, line 34, I'm not sure what 677.655 is.
That is the diversion program statute itself.
The statute.
Okay.
That outlines the diversion program.
So whereas I think Section 8, or the part about the public meeting law and adding that to the rest is a more umbrella term in terms of the public deliberations for that council versus the criteria and how
we
do that
with here.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have a conceptual motion on line 12, page 2 of the A8s. Is there any objection to that?
May I just ask a clarification?
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I would interpret deliberations as more expansive, and is that the goal? Because if there are conversations outside the official meetings, they should also not be. I'm just curious. Deliberations and meetings are different things.
Meetings bigger than deliberations.
Well,
Is that
Chair Greenlight?
I think deliberations is broader. Yeah,
Vice Chair Kotek. Actually, I think it's. The meetings are broader. The deliberations on the cases is a narrower scope of in a portion of the meeting.
Oh, I understand. So there could be a deliberation in the meeting to discuss how the case will be resolved, for example, versus you could have an entire meeting.
Or you could have a meeting that talked about budgets and other things.
Right. So similar to like executive session, you would, in the course of the public meeting, you would say we need to go into executive session to have the deliberations, which are not open to public disclosure.
Mr. Chair. Analogy to a jury deliberation, where that's the part where the decision is made or a discussion is made about what the outcome should be.
Mr. Chair, is that Scott's
is that your
interpretation as well?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cannon, for the record, Scott Gallant, Oregon Medical Association. We try to clarify it even further, actually, in the lines further down, where it specifically says case reviews, deliberations, and communications. That would all fall under the confidentiality piece, which is essentially what happens today. This clarifies that, elucidates it. And the board's position was that they did not want other administrative functions of the HPP board, discussions about, I guess, agendas or whatever, exempted from the public meetings law. So this accomplishes that, even with the proceedings, and we specify what we're talking about in that other section. And that's in on, sorry to do this to you, the dash eights, line 12, where it says in line 37 after the period, insert case reviews, etc. So we're trying to clarify, and I believe it does, clarifies what is exactly exempted from the public meetings.
So just to clarify, the board wants to be able to say we're having a meeting.
Right.
For transparency
Correct.
Purposes, but
Right.
part
and,
of that
and
is
they could
not
talk about
be
administrative open. Things that would be subject to the public meetings laws and notices, et cetera. And so we agreed to that. Seemed reasonable at the time when we did it.
Thank you.
We ready?
I have a question now. Because now we have an inconsistent...
We only have a motion on the motion is on the one word right now.
I understand, but we have an inconsistency then, because where we're talking about the... In line 37 on page 2, case reviews, deliberations...
I'm sorry, are you talking about the amendment?
We're talking about the amendment.
Page 2 of the amendment.
No.
Page 2 of the hand and gross?
Right. Page 2 of the hand and gross.
Yes.
That has more definition than, say, the other section.
Yeah. Right, but, okay, I'm just reading from the amendment. Case reviews, deliberations, and communications are exempt from the provisions of the public record.
But then when you get to the part where the public record law is amended, it says deliberations are exempt. So the question is, it's inconsistent, because in one place it says case reviews, deliberations, and communications are exempt, and in the other place it says deliberations are exempt. So... There's a difference.
Yeah, there's a difference even if we don't do it then, right? Or maybe
right.
not, because we have meetings if we don't do it.
So I'm wondering if that's an LC question, because perhaps they felt that to have consistency in the to amending 192.690, not to put all that, but I don't know if one precludes the other. It's a good, I don't know.
Maybe that's why they use meetings, because maybe they thought meetings included... Case reviews, deliberations,
all right,
and
communication. Well, they were all right with either of them. If you're nervous about it, let's withdraw the conceptual motion and go ahead with leaving it the way it is. Either way.
If the...
Mr. Chair, I think you've raised some very good questions. If I may, excuse me. I apologize.
No, you have it.
If we may, why don't we go back to the original amendment?
Original.
This is why it's always dangerous to amend things in committee.
In conception.
And
exactly right.
We'll work with the board to make sure that things are not out of hand. And if there are problems, we'll work with them and you to clarify.
Would you withdraw the conceptual motion, please?
Mr. Chair, I would withdraw the conceptual amendment to the -A8.
All right. How about a motion on the A8?
How about that? Let's move. Mr. Chair, I would move the -A8 amendment to Senate Bill 145.
Discussion.
Mr. Chair, I will be a no on these amendments, and I guess I'm just really sensitive to the tension that this bill generally brings up between the Board of Medical Examiner's role as a regulatory agency helping safeguard the safety of the public versus its role as this program really submits it to helping aid professionals who are sick and need help. And I'm concerned that this amendment helps tip the balance and towards, you know, protecting helping treat the doctor and safeguard the doctor and not the public. And I guess, you know, I really appreciate the work that's been done on this. I think the program is really important, and I'm
I guess I will probably be a yes on the bill because I think this needs to happen, and Board of Medical Examiners has put a lot of work into helping make it happen. But I'm really troubled by all these exemptions from public records, public disclosure, the carve-outs that we're making for this program. If it requires all that, maybe it shouldn't really be the Board of Medical Examiners that's operating this program. It should be another agency. So
we can discuss that on a different day, but I think that's something up for discussion.
Thanks.
It may not be arm's length enough relationship. All right. Let's do a roll call on the amendment.
Representative Bonamici.
Aye.
Representative Bruin.
Aye.
Representative Cannon.
No.
Representative Flores.
Excuse me. Aye.
Representative Gelfer. Excuse. Representative Maurer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Kotek.
Aye.
Vice Chair
Rosenthal.
Aye. Chair
Greenman. Aye. The dash 8s are part of Senate Bill 145.
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 145 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Discussion on the motion?
Just one, Mr. Chair, following up on the comments that have been made. You know, we have, if I recall, impaired practitioner. Can we have other impaired practitioner programs
some
and other
version.
Of some yeah, version? And I'd be curious to know if are there problems in the other areas as well, because it would not make sense to just take out physicians when maybe there has to be a separate entity to deal with any folks in the medical health care profession who need assistance. I'm just, you know, this might be bigger than the BME, but again, something to think about in the interim.
This is
when we
all
get back together again.
This is a grandmother program of all the programs, and then it's designed. I think it's now at that sort of adolescent day where things become difficult to deal with, and we need to take a breath. But the important thing of this bill is that it adds the ability to get mental health services for physicians who are impaired by mental health. I have to say, when I first saw this bill, I think I told Ms. Haley, I thought these had been added years ago. And I've been familiar with this bill since, I guess, Joe Bloom was involved 100 years ago with this program. It is a very important program, and we do have a stake to make sure it runs as best as it possibly can. Are we ready for a roll call? Karen?
Representative
Bonamici. Aye. Representative Bruin. Aye. Representative Cannon. Aye. Representative Flores. Aye. Representative Gelfer. Aye. Vice Chair Kotek.
Aye. Vice Chair Rosenthal. Aye.
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 Senate Bill 145, as amended, is on its way to the House.
Mr. Chair,
I'll
carry it for us.
Thank you. I need to tell you that you guys are awesome. We did. We had a huge agenda today of some very difficult things, and I think you did. We did a great job. We should be very proud. I have a very important thing to announce, and that's just a reminder that we're having a party on June 14th at Riverfront Park, is it called?
Correct.
Riverfront Park.
June
14th. June 14th, 6:00, or whenever the floor session ends.
Right. Well, we have the pavilion till 10, so even if we don't get out until 7, we still have a couple of hours because we've got it for a 4-hour block.
We'll have a chance to go off and fry the chicken or something.
Exactly.
And I have access to a home karaoke machine, and you know.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I've got an electric guitar.
Then we need to make sure we have enough alcohol.
Yeah. We need
home karaoke doesn't work when everybody's sober.
That's right.
We don't have a permit for alcohol.
Oh, so. All right. Well,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Then we'll have
thank
to
you.
Have it without a permit.
Yes,
Representative Bruin,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Since our last meeting, I just wanted to publicly say I appreciate your leadership within this committee. It's been a very enjoyable committee for me, and your leadership has been, and I'm aware that I'm doing this on the record, but your leadership has been at times fatherly, at times scholarly, and at all times George Patton-esque. And I appreciate that. I think it's a good model to learn from. I think it's been an excellent committee. We've had some very heated and passionate discussions, never arguments, and that's been the great thing. And that's, for me as a legislator, that deliberation, even when you're on opposite ends of the spectrum, is one of the most fulfilling things for me as a legislator. I found that to be something that we've demonstrated repeatedly in this committee. So my hat's off to you and this committee. It's been a great experience. And my hope is that we continue, that this is the body that continues here in the interim, and we can sort of begin to get our arms around this comprehensive health care thing once again.
I have asked the speaker to see if when 329 comes over, we can get a special committee to look at it here, where we might have some chance at least to talk about it. This has been a great committee. You guys have been wonderful. I also want to thank the lobbyists, some of whom are still here. There's been a lot of difficult issues that have been made so much easier because people have been willing to sit down and talk, and we've come to many agreements, many more than I thought we were going to get to, including at least three of them today that I thought were very admirable. So thank you all very much, and hold June 14th. This committee rocks, and we'll rock on the 14th.